we've been involved from the beginning trying to, first of all, have Chancellor Weiss reverse her decision to not send Professor Salaita's papers forward to the Board of Trustees. When the Board of Trustees on September 11th received the papers and refused to hire Professor Salaita, we spoke out against this as a breach of academic freedom and of the principles of shared governance. And we have been trying to work with our faculty senate. We have members of the Campus Faculty Association, are members also of the faculty senate. We've been trying to get support from across all of our faculty, among all our faculty colleagues, to call upon Chancellor Weiss to rethink and somehow make right this decision that has had such tremendously negative consequences for our university.
When you say tremendously negative consequences for the university, give me some examples. What do you mean?
So the negative consequences include the need to cancel 30 to 40 speakers who refused to come to our campus because of the decision to fire Professor Salaita or to not hire Professor Salaita, as well as other very serious repercussions, including, and this is one that we can talk about in a bit, perhaps, the possibility that the university will be placed under censure by the American Association of University Professors, the AAUP. And being placed under censure would be a significant blow to the university. We haven't been placed under censure since 1960, when we previously fired a professor for his outspoken views on premarital sex.
To a non-academic, censure sounds like yet another non-binding kind of opinion. So explain the significance of censure.
The university, when it hires new faculty, sends to them a brochure explaining what academic freedom is, what their rights are under the academic freedom, and also what tenure means. And the brochures that they send, have been written by the standard bearer for academic freedom and tenure in the United States since its foundation, namely the AAUP. They were the ones who first coined the term academic freedom, and their definition and their standards are what our university and every university in the United States comply with. And we send out this to our new hires. We would not be permitted to send to our new hires these brochures. And in effect, we would be compelled to admit that the university does not comply with wide national standards regarding academic freedom and tenure. In that light, new hires would be well advised to think twice about accepting an offer from the University of Illinois. So censure would, in effect, be a stamp of, you could say, this product is not kosher. It would be, in effect, to call our university and its hiring procedures into question and to say that anyone who comes to this campus must beware that they might be subject to practices and policies that are not in compliance with national standards. That would be a blow to this university that was as devastating a blow as it was in 1960. The university was forced after 5 years to rewrite its statutes in order to comply with what the AAUP required of them, and had to admit that what it had done was a breach of allow national standards regarding academic freedom and tenure. There can be no greater censure to a university of our stature than an AAUP censure. And we have done everything that we can over the past 40 years, 50 years, to remain in good standing. And now we are threatened with a censure from the AUP. So yes, it isn't legally binding, but it would have tremendous repercussions on the stature of our university.
And when we look back at that censure that in 1960, that was based on a professor's letter to the student newspaper, right? Letter to the editor of the Daily Illini about premarital sex.
I mean, that's correct.
It looks pretty silly to us now, right?
Today looks absurd. But the president of the university at that time was a somewhat conservative gentleman, and he said that the letter was abhorrent, and the professor could not possibly continue to teach, given the degrading and abhorrent values that he was espousing. Yes, and today we look back and we say, oh my God, how could we have allowed ourselves to be placed in censure for such what today seems a minor breach? I mean, I don't know if in the future we'll look back upon Stephen Salaita's tweets and ever say that they're minor or, you know, simply dismiss them as trivial. I don't think we should do that, but I do believe that we will, and we now can say that the actions taken by the university in response to the tweet were both far beyond what was called for and completely in contradiction with our procedures and with our own university statutes. We have violated practically every single provision for shared governance, for the way in which departments, deans, and even the provost of this university, the responsibilities that they have were overturned by the chancellor's decision and then the president's decision to rescind the offer of hire from Professor Salaita. So while I do not in any way trivialize the tweet, I do believe that the report makes it very clear that the actions of the administration in response to those tweets was far beyond what was appropriate or even within the bounds of our statutory principles.
And you said that this report is a bombshell and a game changer.
In effect, the recommendation of the report is that the case of Stephen Salaita be reopened and the decision to withdraw an offer of hire, first of all, and then the Board of Trustees' decision to not approve his letter of hire on September 11, both of those decisions have to be recalled. And we return to a condition where Stephen Salaita has a valid letter of offer for tenure at this university. The committee that the report recommends be formed by faculty experts to consider whether or not Stephen Salaita was in breach of his professional standards of scholarship when he tweeted what he did. That committee would operate on the assumption that Stephen Salaita has a valid letter of offer. So, in a sense, of hire. And that if the decision of that committee were that Stephen Salaita did not act in breach of professional standards and has not, then he ought to be given his job back, or he ought to be granted the job, and the letter of hire should be approved. The whole recommendation is an overturning every decision that has been made in the Stephen Salida case. Nobody, it cannot be acted upon unless the letter of hire be considered to be valid. Why would any faculty committee be formed to deal with anyone who has, someone who is no longer even remotely related to this university? The only principle upon which the letter a committee could be formed would be that the letter of hire offering him a tenured position at the university remains legally binding on the university.
What's the reaction of the faculty to this report? What are you hearing from your colleagues?
I am hearing from members of the Campus Faculty Association, as well as from people across the humanities, at least, that this is a call to action, that this is a moment when we must raise our voices in support of the report and call upon our administration to do the right thing and to act upon the report's recommendation. Everyone that I have been following on email, and I haven't been speaking to people, but I've been watching the email grow in my inbox over the last few hours, has been saying this is an incredible, amazing, and courageous report.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for taking time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dusty, for giving me a call and giving me the chance to speak. I feel strongly about it, as you can tell, and I hope that we can resolve this now. This is a really important moment at the university, and I really do hope that that President Killeen can help us get beyond this, because it's going to be difficult now that this report is out.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Dusty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.